Don't mind us, we're playing through. Here's Froggy and Wacker.
Thank you so much for listening to another edition of the Playing Through podcast. It's Froggy from Elvis Duran in the Morning Show, along with Brian Wacker from Golf Digest. And Brian, we've got another PGA Tour season in the books, and it's time for what we call the playoffs.
Playoffs? Sorry, that was my really bad Jim Moore impression.
No, but it was good. You know what? A lot of people don't buy into these playoffs, and they've changed them around a couple times. I know now the point system is quadrupled to make wins more valuable and whatnot, but here we are. It is our FedEx Cup playoffs, and for me, the best part of all, Tiger Woods is in the mix.
He is. Tiger Woods playing and has committed to playing all three of the first three playoff events, of course. It'll be contingent on the fourth, as long as he's in the top 30 after three, which, given his performances this year, it would hardly be a surprise, given how he has played, for him to make it to East Lake. And the first of those up this week is the Northern Trust at Barclays, where it returns to Ridgewood Country Club this year for the first time since 2014. The last time it was there, of course, people might have a hard time remembering this because it feels like a long time ago, but Hunter Mahan was your winner the last time it was played at Ridgewood. He beat Stuart Appleby, Jason Day, and Cameron Tringali by two. Tiger Woods, your boy, by the way, not in the playoffs that year. Hasn't played the playoffs since 2013.
Yeah, 2013 when he finished second to Henrik Stenson.
Yeah, but won five times that year, and that feels like a long time ago, but certainly feels like he's trending in that direction again. Last time Tiger played this golf course, by the way, was in 2010. He tied for 12th that year. Matt Kuchar was your winner in a playoff over Martin Laird, digging into the memory bank for that one. But yeah, Ridgewood, a great golf course, an old Tillinghast, sort of really classic northeastern golf course. And it'll be fascinating to watch because Tiger will need to hit the driver some, and it's a tree-lined golf course with a lot of rough. And Froggy, you mentioned some possible changes, it looks like, in Tiger's driver setup yet again.
Yeah, so real quick, I want to recap or go over what we're going to do here on the podcast. We've got a guest today in Scott Stallings. He's going to be here. He's the guy that's made it to this round of the FedEx Cup playoffs, but we'll need to play well till advance. We'll talk to Scott a little bit later on in the program, and then we're also going to cover everything going on from the Wyndham and going into the Northern Trust and then moving forward in the playoffs. But yes, as you said, Tiger Woods has made an adjustment with the driver. It looks like he has gone, which to me, I don't really understand the change. He's gone up in driver loft from 8.5 to 9.5, it appears, and then also made a change. He's gone back to the Diamana whiteboard shaft now in the driver, which before, he used that before. Then he went to the Tenzi, from Mitsubishi. So we are seeing some tinkering with the driver because, as you know, and I don't think it's really up for discussion, the driver appeared to be the undoing at the PGA Championship. Granted, Brooks Koepka played amazingly well and deserved that championship. However, Tiger's driver appeared to be the Achilles heel there once again. So he has made some changes, but this morning, we're doing this on Wednesday morning, he played a practice round this morning, and I saw his first two fairways, he missed one left, and then he missed one right. So, Brian, what I want to ask you is this a golf course where we'll see, you know, take out the four par threes? Are we going to see driver on all the other par fours, or is it a case where maybe he could get away with the three wood or get away with some irons and then have some longer approaches into these greens?
Well, you know, I touched on this earlier. This is a golf course where he will need to mostly hit the driver. This is not a course like Carnoustie where he could get away with, obviously, hitting a bunch of irons and letting the ball run out, or even the PGA Championship in Belle Reve where he was able to use some irons off the tee, albeit unsuccessfully, oddly enough, it putting the ball in the rough quite a bit. But look, he's going to have to hit some drivers this week. It's just the kind of golf course it is. It's a long golf course, lots of trees, a place where you've got to keep it in the fairway. The early reports are the rough is very healthy there. And again, you look at guys who have won there in the past, go back to Hunter Mahan back in 2014, back when he was playing well, and there was a guy who was a terrific driver of the golf ball at the prime of his career and in the height of his game. So I would suspect that, yes, we're going to see a fair bit of drivers, which explains the tinkering to me in the driver, because he's clearly still trying to get it dialed in, and we've seen that his struggles with it, that's been well documented, as you mentioned. So he's trying to find a comfort zone with that driver, and maybe this will be the week. We'll see how it plays out over the course of the week, but yes, it is a course where he will have to hit driver most of the time, and will not be able to just use long irons and three woods to pick apart the golf course.
Now, two players that we won't see this week that are sitting out, Ricky Fowler has an oblique injury. He's going to sit out this week, and Rory McIlroy also said that he just needs some time to sort out some struggles that he's having after a 50th place finish at the PGA Championship. Both Fowler's 17th in the points. Ricky is 21st in the points. Both are fine. They are not in danger of missing the next level. So in the FedEx Cup playoffs, top 125 this week. We will see the top 100 at the Dell next week. Then we get a break, and we'll see the top 70 at the BMW, and then the top 30 will make it to the Tour Championship. And anybody in the Tour Championship, if I'm not mistaken, is mathematically able to win the FedEx Cup if they win the tournament mathematically. Is that correct?
It is, yeah, of course. And we saw that the ultimate get-rich-quicker story. And I've got a story about this, by the way. All the perks of getting to East Lake, which you mentioned Scott Stallings earlier, who was kind enough to join us for this week's podcast. He has never made it to the top 30. It's a big goal, and you'll hear all about why, and you can read all about why on golfdigest.com. There are a lot of perks, among them getting into three of the four majors next year, the PGA Championship being the lone exception, although generally it plays out that if you get to that point in the top 30, you've done well enough that money-wise and so forth, that you're going to qualify for the PGA anyway. But it's a big deal to get to that. And if you're in the field, it, of course, gives you the chance to win the FedEx Cup and the $10 million. And the ultimate story of that was Bill Haas, of course, back in 2011, entered, I believe, 25th, maybe 26th in the standings, needed about, you know, 10 things to go his way, including, by the way, winning the golf tournament.
Right.
He wins the tournament, of course, with the hole out from a hazard in a playoff, and goes on, you know, gets every other break he needed in terms of other players, ends up winning the FedEx Cup and the $10 million payout.
Yeah, now, as you say, making it to the Tour Championship is a big deal. And somebody who's made it every single year since turning pro in 2013 is Jordan Spieth. He's made it every year. This year, struggling a little bit. He's currently 43rd in the points. Will need to play his way into East Lake. Granted, he has three tournaments to do it. He's very securely in the top 70 right now to make the first three tournaments. Brian, are you hearing anything about what's going on with Jordan, about what the struggles are, or maybe what the fix is? Because he did seemed to be putting it together last time we saw him at the PGA Championship.
Although it was fascinating, by the way, your favorite player, I'm surprised Jordan got a mention in this podcast. we know how much you love Jordan.
He's my favorite.
But, I think he shockingly admitted he sort of was working on the wrong thing. And we talked about this in the last podcast when he wrapped up PGA Championship for about 2 months, so he felt like he had set back, and then he had to work his way back out of that and then try to get to a place where he feels good about his golf swing. But of course, the putter has been a major disappointment for him this year. He has really struggled with it, has trended a little bit better with it lately, so you would figure that, look, at some point that trend will stop and he will right the ship. He's certainly done it before in the playoffs, had success, won the FedEx Cup in the past. So I fully expect that Jordan will right the ship and somehow make it to East Lake. I don't think he'll win the FedEx Cup. However, I think it'll end up being too big a hill to climb ultimately for him. I would look at guys who are already in that top 5, top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings, maybe top 15, if you want to look a little deeper. But really it comes down to putting for Jordan. We've seen that. Throughout his career, that's been the hallmark of his success. When the putts go, look, there's a reason the cliche exists, drive for show, putt for dough.
Yep.
and Jordan just hasn't been putting well. So, you know, that'll come around at some point, you would think, and he'll be just fine.
So before we get to your conversation with Scott Stallings, also want to talk about Ryder Cup. You know, Ryder Cup's coming up. So, a lot of people not buying into the whole FedEx Cup playoffs. I know some people are just looking forward to Ryder Cup. So those who did not make it mathematically still have a chance to play their way into a captain's pick. Now, if I understand it correctly, Jim Furyk will make three at-large selections in the 2 weeks following the Dell Technologies Championship and then make one final pick 1 week later. And it seems like the consensus is that Tiger and Phil are two of those picks, and there will be two remaining for players such as Bryson DeChambeau, Matt Kuchar, maybe Kevin Kisner, Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, Zach Johnson, Brent Snedeker, who just won at the Wyndham, is getting hot. Who do you think? Are you in agreement that Tiger and Phil are the first two picks?
I am, yeah. There's no way that Tiger certainly is not getting picked. And really, Phil, I have a hard time imagining that he would be left off the team. Of course, he hasn't played all that great since winning earlier this year, early in the season. He's kind of had an up-and-down summer. Quite frankly, his year has been known for everything but his golf. Which is sort of classic Phil, really, when you
right.
think about it. But, look, there's no way he's being left off that team. He's been on every single team throughout his career, you know, dating back 20-plus years now. There is no way he's being left off. There's no way Tiger certainly is being left off. You look at just the standings alone. I mean, right now, Tiger at 11th in the standings, Phil 10th in the standings, Bryson DeChambeau at 9 in the standings. It'll be fascinating to me the other two spots because – as some of the names you touched on, I think it does come down to Bryson. You could look at Xander Schauffele, who's played well in majors and played well throughout the course of the year and especially lately. Matt Kuchar, I think, at 13th in the standings, dropping a spot from 12th from last week. He is a fascinating guy because I think there is likely another pick is Matt Kuchar. So that really leaves one spot for Bryson DeChambeau, Xander Schauffele. Kevin Kisner is a very popular name that you hear an awful lot, and rightfully so. He's at 14th in the standings and would be an absolute terrific fit for that team for what he brings to the golf course in terms of his short game, his personality. You know, Tony Finau, another guy who's had a big year. I think he is in the conversation. So Brian Harman, another player who I've long sort of been a fan of in terms of thinking he would be a terrific fit on the Ryder Cup in terms of how he drives the ball, how good his short game is, and how good his putting is, and his personality as well. He's at 17th in the standings, right behind Kyle Stanley at 16. So if Harman were to make a run in the playoffs these first 2 weeks, he could be in the conversation for that fourth spot, you know, even through the first three events. So it'll be fascinating to see how it plays up. Really, I think it comes down to one you know, maybe four or five names for one spot because I think you're looking at Phil, Tiger, and probably a very good chance Matt Kuchar as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's all this talk about the U.S. team, but let's not forget about the European team. Thomas Bjorn's going to have some interesting selections to make. Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia currently on the outside looking in for the European team.
Yeah, and those are certainly the two biggest names kind of, you know, as you mentioned, outside looking in. Look, I think Ian Poulter is on the team. He's played well this year. He's had a bit of a resurgence. He tends to play well, obviously, in the event. He's been he's had a long and storied history of just being an absolute killer for the European team. And, you know, look, fits great in the team room. He is, you know, just the guy you hate to go against.
Right.
It feels like every time, you know, an Ian Poulter wins a point, it's worth maybe a point and a half. Like,
right.
That much. Right. He just has that sort of impact. And, you know, Sergio is a fascinating case because another player who's got a storied Ryder Cup career, but has had an absolutely dreadful season.
Yeah, he's had a really bad year since making that equipment change.
Yeah, and he's not in the playoffs, so he doesn't have a chance to improve on that standing unless he, you know, does so over in Europe. But it's not been a good year for Sergio. I'm just looking at the numbers here for him. When you break it down, he has played 18 tournaments this year in 2018. He's missed the cut in seven of them. That's the most he has missed in his career since 2003. He's got five top tens, including a win, but the win came, of course, a long time ago, early in the year. So back in Singapore, Thomas Bjorn addressing the was very diplomatic addressing his potential Ryder Cup picks during the PGA Championship. Not surprisingly so. He's very much a politician in that regard, but also a well-respected voice in that community, in that room. I think everybody will look up to him as captain and will really enjoy playing for a Thomas Bjorn-led team. Whether Sergio's on that team, though, will be interesting because I'm not sure he's done enough. But that said, his career resume may warrant a pick, and his experience certainly would be valuable on that team when you look at the makeup of the rest of the roster with some younger faces. So I do think ultimately Sergio, unless someone makes a move late here to really warrant being picked, I think Sergio ends up being one of those four picks, one of those picks for Thomas Bjorn.
Yeah, and as a guy who's polling for the U.S. team to win, which I know this will be a tough victory, I'm hoping Sergio's on the team because he's not playing that well, so I think it would – but you know what? Hey, listen, sometimes guys come alive in Ryder Cup and do some unworldly things that are not the norm. You'll always get that in a Ryder Cup. But before we get to Ryder Cup, we've got to get these FedEx Cup playoffs out of the way. And, yes, this week, the Northern Trust – at Ridgewood Country Club. And you had time to sit down with Scott Stallings, who's a bubble guy who's got to play his way in to the next week. Tell us a little bit about your conversation with Scott Stallings.
Yeah, look, Scott, a terrific conversationalist, and I think that's reflected hopefully in the chat that we had. The three-time winner on tour, the last of those victories coming in 2014 at Torrey Pines. But you're right, on the bubble. So talked about the playoffs, what it means, being on the bubble, what the playoffs mean, just getting to them, advancing to them, of course, the perks of trying to make it to East Lake and what that could mean, everything that goes with it, both financially and schedule-wise. We get into, of course, Tiger Woods, and he's got some great Tiger Woods stories, having played with Tiger a few times, and that's toward the end of the podcast, so be sure to listen all the way through because he's got some really, really entertaining stuff on Tiger at the end, and we talked about the golf course. Of course, we talked about his suspension 3 years ago for having taken a supplement, which was ultimately on the banned substance list, even though he had self-reported himself. He was, of course, suspended for 3 months, joining a list of names, interestingly enough, that includes guys like Mark Hensby, Doug Barron, Vijay Singh, and Bhavik Patel. Other than Vijay, not really the upper crust of golf. So we had an interesting conversation about sort of the whole drug testing policy, how it works, how the suspension policy worked, how his case went down, all of that, and talked a little bit of sports, talked a little bit of coffee. He's a big coffee nerd, which he had a great bit of advice. If you want to find a tour pro when you're at a tournament, just go to your local coffee shop, whatever the best one in the area is. Go to a Chipotle, and you're guaranteed to find some tour pros at one of those two places for sure.
Yeah, unless you're looking for like a Dustin Johnson or Brooks Koepka, they'll be at your local gym lifting weights.
Yeah, you're not going to see those guys. Then you might want to hit up the local Colts gym or LA Fitness because you're not finding those guys in Chipotle or coffee shop.
Nope. Let's get into Scott Stallings. He's trying to play his way into round number two of the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Brian Wacker from Golf Digest here with Scott Stallings, who's kind enough to take a few minutes out of his morning to join us on the eve of the start of the PGA Tour playoffs. Thanks again for joining us. I want to ask you, Scott, first of all, for viewers or listeners who aren't familiar, three-time winner, of course, on tour, last of those victories coming in 2014 at Torrey Pines. Actually got to a playoff there the following year. We'll get to that, that you had lost the year later. But when it comes to the playoff, first you're at Ridgewood this week, a terrific old Tillinghast course. course. Are you kind of a are you a golf course nerd at all, or does it really matter what course you're playing?
It kind of really doesn't matter. I mean, there's parts of it that are exciting. I mean, obviously, Tillinghast is, you know, one of the best, if not, I mean, obviously, it's kind of, you know, personal preference kind of all throughout. But, you know, I don't really feel like I appreciated this place like I probably should have when I was back in 14. I was struggling with my game going into the playoffs, and it didn't matter what course we played. Every place seemed hard. And, you know, coming in, my game feels a lot better. I feel like I've got a little bit more control over the ball. And, you know, I had a chance to play the golf course Sunday afternoon with no one out there. And, like, man, like, this place is fantastic. A little bit disappointing from the setup perspective in terms of, like, I wish we'd get to play the golf course the way it was designed instead of, you know, some of the ways the tournaments kind of move some of the, you know, the tees around and so on and so forth. But, you know, everyone has to play it, and, you know, but it'd been cool to kind of see it the way that it was designed to play, you know, back when he designed it in the 20s.
Has that become, I don't want to say a problem, that's too strong of a word, but you hear that a lot from players, set up, and, you know, the tour does a good job week to week on setting these courses up, but the game is moved into a different direction. It's a bomber's game now, and how much do you think that has affected the way, you know, this whole, the way everyone goes about it now, because because distance has become such a vital part of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think distance is a thing, but, you know, everyone has this idea of, like, what they think this, like, optimal score is or whatever, and I think that's completely irrelevant. I think, if I'm a fan of golf, like, I want to see good scores. I want to see guys go out there. And I'm not saying we have to have a chance to shoot 59 every single day, but I think having the opportunity to play the golf course the way it was designed, I mean, Glen Oaks is a great example of where we played last year. I mean, that first hole was 510 yard. I mean, and par is a relevant number, especially if you ask someone from the USGA. But, you know, you're playing a golf hole that is designed for shorter irons, and we're playing in there, and it's the opening hole of the event. And it's just a hole that's just not designed for those kind of shots to come in. And, you know, I just, you know, the 10th hole at Ridgewood is a great example. The 10th hole is probably the smallest green on the golf course, and it's the longest par four on the golf course. And it's a blind second shot.
Not a great combination.
Yeah, I mean, I just think from a player's perspective, I don't see the significance of, like, why are we playing this from here? Instead of, like, what's wrong with playing it from 545, 550 yards, where you actually drive the ball in the design driving area. And, you know, it would be a blind second shot, but it's also, you know, a hole that's designed for a third shot to come in with a short iron or a wedge from the top part of the flat coming into the green. And, you know, you play a hole like 9, which is a downhill par 4, you could probably put at least four of the 10th green into the 9th green. And, you know, obviously everyone has to deal with it and so on and so forth, and there's some nuances to Tillinghast and stuff like that, but I'm sure that him looking down is like, okay, that's not the way I designed this hole to be played. But, I mean, that's part of it, too. You know, the golf ball definitely, you know, whatever you want to call it, goes further, goes shorter, whatever. I think that in terms of the viewership and the people that come out to watch golf, like, you know, I think that stuff's exciting. And, you know, guys are fitter, they're stronger, they're faster, they're, you know, they take care of themselves, they do the things off the golf course to be able to be better athletes. And, you know, the tour of the past is no more. And, you know, everyone's doing something to try to get a little better. And, you know, ultimately, you know, that's going to make us better athletes and perform better on the golf course. And distance is kind of a byproduct of that. Technology's helped some, but I think the stuff guys do off the golf course, you know, makes a huge difference in all that.
Well, you're certainly one of the more fit guys on tour, and we'll get to that in a second. But you mentioned the word excitement, and I'm curious that from the player's perspective. Now, you come into this week 107th in the FedEx Cup standings in the playoffs, the top 100 after this week, obviously advanced. How much, generally speaking, do the playoffs matter to guys? You know, we're 10 plus years into this FedEx Cup. How much does it matter for the guys. Obviously, their significance of finishing in the top 125 to secure the following year's card. But beyond that, is there excitement among players? Is it limited to the guys who are in that top 5, 10 upper echelon to have a chance to win the FedEx Cup and the $10 million? Where do you fall in that conversation, I guess?
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, it's been kind of a, you know, it's been a year of a lot of really close calls in terms of, you know, I feel like my game kind of makes a step in the right direction. And then it just kind of, you know, as, you know, a lot of changes in my body over the course of the year and just kind of the way that I've sort of evolved it in that aspect of my life and, you know, starting to learn how to, you know, take better care of myself. Same thing with my golf game. And I've never made it to Atlanta. And, you know, that was a big goal to start the year. And obviously I've got my work cut out for me now. But this event for someone in my position is where you can have sort of a, you know, making it here is a big step, like you said. But I think in terms of someone that's, you know, outside looking in, you finish in the top 5 in this event, you make it to Atlanta right out of the get-go. And I think that's just the way that the points are skewed and so on and so forth, you know, it kind of frees you up in terms of how you got to go play because, you know, I could play just average and not move on. So, you know, the idea of going out there, being aggressive and doing the things you need to do because ultimately, like, you know, the playoffs reward, I mean, just like anyone in terms of whatever sport you play, you get in a situation, you get an opportunity, you need to take advantage of it. And, you know, hopefully I can go out there and do that this week.
Well, I wasn't going to bring up the fact that you hadn't reached Atlanta, but I've actually got a story coming out that kind of outlines just how big of a deal it is, and you can check that out on golfpages.com this week. But tell our listeners just how big a deal, because I'm not sure that a lot of fans necessarily get really just how big a deal it is to make it to that top 30 and all the perks that go with it.
Outside of just purely financial, because that should kind of go without saying, in terms of the opportunity just for earning potential, but the idea to make your schedule for the next year around the majors, and it's bizarre that the only major you technically don't get in is the PGA, but ultimately if you've made the Tour Championship, you've made enough money to get in the PGA, in terms of their qualifying system.
Right.
Obviously, there's nuances throughout the whole deal, but the idea to make your schedule and know the tournaments and the WGCs and the invitationals and the overseas events, the falls become so important now in terms to get out to a good start to the year. And you know, to the Tour's credit, man, they've kind of figured out a way to create a system to where guys almost, like, can't afford to take a bunch of weeks off. And you know, because once you get behind in this system, it's tough to make up ground. And, you know, there's guys that obviously are, you know, do that every single year, but it's becoming more and more difficult just as, you know, guys play a little bit more, guys have a little more opportunities to kind of earn points, especially through the fall. But, you know, you make it to Atlanta and you're looking at, you know, 5 or 6, maybe 7 no-cut events in terms of invitationals overseas and WGC events. I mean, that's a huge perk in itself to go play a smaller field, bigger purse, more points, and then kind of play your way around your schedule, around your majors where you know you're in them. And you can kind of go about your planning and practice because the last few, I qualified for Shinnecock this year on Monday of Memphis. And I spent almost the entire week in Memphis trying to get prepared to get up to Shinnecock just from a logistics standpoint, not necessarily a golf standpoint. You know, for instance, this year throughout the whole, qualifying process for the Open Championship, I actually, pulled myself out of it just from the simple fact of the two Opens that I played. I was one of the last guys in the field due to my world ranking. And that's the most unprepared I've ever felt in a golf event. It was a great experience, all this and that, but in terms of, being prepared to play a major championship against the best players in the world, I was so far behind the eight ball. I found out Thursday of John Deere I got in the event. I mean, that's no way to get prepared. I mean, I felt like I might as well have stayed in another country. But just trying to, you know, figure out, you know, unfortunately over there, the logistics don't quite work as well as they do over here, and you know, you kind of get stuck with whatever you're dealt with over there. But I think just from a planning and strategic standpoint, you know, Atlanta's a big benchmark in people's career. And obviously, if you get there, I mean, anything can happen. I mean, from, you know, Bill Haas to Jim Furyk to all these different, you know, crazy things that have happened in Atlanta. And, you know, kind of a great culmination of a, you know, a year challenge, and the FedEx Cup is kind of created all through that. I look forward to kind of seeing how it transitions from this year on to next year as far as where the schedule changes to, and kind of see how that shakes out.
Now, you mentioned logistics, and one of the things you've been, you know, an open book about, quite frankly, is, of course, 3 years ago when you were suspended, you had learned that a hormone had prescribed by your doctor to address a documented medical condition was considered a performance-enhancing drug, and you subsequently were, you know, called the penalty on yourself, told the tour, very open about it, but had to sit out 3 months for it. And I wonder if you could kind of briefly go back, not to rehash sort of all of that, because you've talked quite a bit about it, but what was that afternoon like? I guess you met that the week of the Zurich Classic with then Commissioner Tim Tinchin at TPC Louisiana to plead your case. Walk us through what the procedure, you know, is like for those situations when you go through it, and the aftermath of what effect it maybe had on you.
I mean, I don't want to kind of necessarily get into the ins and outs, because it was kind of a very unique process. There was a lot of ambiguity in terms of, you know, how certain things would be handled. And, you know, frankly, if, you know, I kind of felt like I was a case that they needed. It was a guy doing the right thing at the right time for the tour, man. And ultimately the Olympics were a big part of it. You know, the tour started to abide by full WADA specifications, and, you know, you know, whether, you know, sort of a lot of people will come and it's like, oh, well, you failed. It's like, no, man, I'd never failed a test ever in my entire career. And, it's like, well, how does that work? It's like, well, if you told them you did it, you know, they got you. And, you know, I kind of felt like I was going to be given the opportunity to hopefully come alongside the tour and educate guys as far as how easily it was to kind of make a mistake, especially when you sit in a doctor's office like I did. And a doctor tells you can go buy something, you know, at a grocery store, you don't really think anything about it. You know, I'm not doing some shady back alley deal. I mean, I went to a Kroger and bought something off the shelf. And, I mean, it was $10 and I truly never thought anything about it. And then, you know, you can say whatever you want. You know, the tour, you know, took a very opportunistic view of my situation, and you know, in my opinion, I would have liked to see them handle it different, but ultimately, you know, that was their decision, and you know, I need to do a better job on my end as far as due diligence. But I think, unfortunately, just by the way that they handled my situation, I don't think anyone would ever do that again. And just as far as the guys were, I was truly not trying to do anything to take advantage of my competitors. My health was my first and foremost priority, and I think everyone on tour understands that. And, you know, whether I was suspended for 3 months or whatever, man, it truly didn't matter. Like, I mean, I couldn't beat you, Brian. When I was out there, I was feeling so bad.
Well, you haven't played lately. So.
But you know what I mean? Like, it was looking back on it, it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me in terms of, like, my health and, you know, having a young family and trying to prioritize, you know, what's truly important and trying to figure out that, man, you only get one go at this life. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say I felt like I took it for granted, but I definitely probably took my health for granted more than I probably wanted to admit. And, you know, you start sitting in a bunch of different doctor's offices all throughout the country, and you start getting some pretty scary words thrown at you, and a lot of tests and needles and so on and so forth. The next thing you know, you're like, holy cow, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And so that kind of started the process in 2015 to kind of reevaluate and kind of figure out what was truly causing the problems I was having. And had a great medical team. I've got a great trainer, a bunch of guys that all come together and, you know, hey, we're going to figure this out. It's going to be a slow process, but, you know, finally, you know, in 2018, you know, 2.5 years later, we're kind of seeing it all come to fruition. And I definitely wouldn't be here without those guys that are around me now.
Yeah, you're one of the, we talked about this at the top, you're one of the more fit guys on tour. And it sounds like the dedication that started around 2015, and you've, you know, obviously dropped a bunch of weight and gotten in some terrific shape. And how important has that been, and how were you able to get to that point of getting in that good of shape?
Yeah, I mean, I think, too, I mean, you know, 33 doesn't seem old, but compared to the average age of a tour is 26, man, I'm ancient. And, you know, just start seeing guys, you know, fitter, stronger, you know, faster, younger, all these different things. Like, man, like, I got to do whatever I possibly can to be able to wake up and be able to compete against the best in the world. And, you know, that's something that, you know, it's nice for me, too, because it gets me away from the golf course. You know, golf is, I love my job. I love the opportunity to go out there and play on tour. But it doesn't necessarily match my personality. Long and slow and mentally taxing things, I tend to struggle with attention span. So it takes a big test of patience. So when I get off the golf course, I want to do something, you know, fast. I want to move around. I want to, you know, do whatever I possibly can to kind of, you know, I wouldn't say golf is mundane, but there's a lot of parts of the job that, I mean, it just takes an incredibly long time to kind of do what we do day in, day out to prepare and be on tour. And, you know, the training and, you know, health and fitness aspect of it has definitely been something that I've enjoyed and I've learned a lot over the last few years, and hopefully continue to help a bunch of other guys realize that, you know, it doesn't take a lot. It's just it kind of sounds cliche to say, I try to make a little bit more better decisions just a little bit more often. And, you know, then it becomes a habit, and then it becomes just a normal part of your day.
Well, you mentioned the faster moving activities, and I know you're a big sports fan. Of course, you were born in New England, grew up in Massachusetts, but went to school in Tennessee and now live there as well. How does that work, being a Boston sports fan in Tennessee?
It works pretty good, man. You know, Red Sox are killing it right now. You know, football season is getting ready to start, and, you know, it'd be interesting to kind of see the Celtics lineup. You know, it's kind of, they get it all sorted out through this off season. But I was born in New England, and obviously, you know, growing up there in the summertime, and all of a sudden, my sister and I would get out of school, and we basically head up and be with my grandparents kind of mostly all throughout the summer. And I mean, play a ton of golf up there and just kind of learn to, you know, fall in love with that part of the country. And unfortunately, the weather doesn't necessarily allow us to be there as much as we'd probably like to. But New England sports, but everyone's like, oh, bandwagon or whatever. I mean, I remember some dark times. I remember going to Fenway Park, you know, they were just begging people to get in the stadium. And now, you know, seeing the way it is now, it's pretty wild to kind of see it all come to the other side. And but, yeah, I've got some Tennessee sports loyalties as well, but definitely nothing like I have from the New England side.
Well, New England is also good coffee drinking weather, which is where I ran into you at morning of the U.S. Open during the week there, of course, up at Shinnecock. And are you a coffee aficionado? Or are you a coffee nerd? And if so, where's the best stops on tour for the best coffee?
I would say I'm in training. There's a few other guys that have definitely got me beat, but I'm trying to learn as much as I possibly can. You know, I always tell people when we do podcasts, like, if you want to meet a tour guy, find the closest Whole Foods or Chipotle and the best coffee place close to the golf course. And if you just camp out, you'll meet a tour player. And one of those three places, potentially all three.
That's right. Yeah. Morning, afternoon, and night.
Yeah, I've kind of got my routine as far as what I do when I'm on the road. And, I mean, those are big parts of, you know, my day in, day out. But I hated coffee all throughout my life. I mean, my mom just drank it all the time and the smell, all this and that. And she kept telling me one day, like, it's going to flip. And I had my daughter was born a couple years ago, and I decided one day, my wife is a big coffee drinker, and she would get up with our daughter early in the morning, drink coffee. So I'm going to get up and start drinking it with you. And I basically just dove head first and got into it, and, you know, so on and so forth. But it's kind of.
Two kids, I guess will do that for you. You're going to need to load up on the coffees. But, another guy, I can't let you go without asking you the obligatory Tiger question. The guy who, by the way, used to hate coffee and now drinks it as well. But he's, of course, in the field this week as well and gets a lot of the attention naturally. So did you think he was done at one point, and how surprised are you at what he's been able to do this season?
Not at all. I tell people this story. In 2013, when he won Muirfield, I played with him on Saturday, and we were in the second-to-last group, and we both played awful. Like, I think we both shot one over, maybe.
Right.
But that was, like, probably the best we could have done. Like, we hit it everywhere. And I think we both shot one over, and we got paired separately on Sunday, and we were walking up 18. I mean, literally, people think that he's driven it wild. I mean, like, he got up and down from everywhere to shoot over par. I mean, drove it all over the place. We're walking up 18, and I said, hey, man, really enjoyed the day. You were great to play with, all this and that. And he said, hey, man, you shoot 67 tomorrow, I will see you in a playoff, because that's what I'm going to shoot. And I'm like, but have you seen what we've done today? Like, we're lucky to be where we are. And so I was in the group in front of him. That was when he holed that pitch shot from over the green and all this yep. and that. You know, been played a million times. Well, he birdies 18 to shoot 66 and win by two, and I waited for him in the scoring area. I was like, 67, huh? I think I shot like even par or something like that, and finished down the road. But okay. He's like, sorry, man. Just kind of snuck that one in on 18. But the way the guy's mind works is, I was, physical talent, all this and that. You can say whatever you want, but the guy's mind to just note, he's like, that's what I feel like. If I shoot that tomorrow, I will have a chance to win. And he was right. So that's all I thought about all the time, is like, if he continues to keep that kind of mindset in terms of, I'm going to do this and continue to put myself in the right, right position, I can basically overcome anything. And that was definitely one of the biggest learning lessons I've had on tour. And so I'm not surprised he's doing what he does. I'm happy. He's great for the game of golf. It's exciting to see. I tell some guys some stories this year. I played with Paul Casey at Tampa when he won, and we were on the 14th hole, and Paul birdied 11, 12, and 13 to get the lead, and we're standing on 14-tee, and maybe like my wife, a couple friends of ours, and some random people from Florida are watching us, and the entire state of Florida is on the 10th hole watching Tiger, and I'm playing with the guy who won.
Well, I was one of those people in that group with Tiger that afternoon, and you're right. It was quite a sight to see. Great stuff from Scott Stallings. Thank you again. Really enjoyed it, and hopefully lots of 67s for you this week. That would probably play pretty well at Ridgewood. So good luck this week, and thanks again for joining us.
Awesome. Milltown Coffee in John Deere, most underrated coffee spot on tour.
Well, I never covered John Deere, probably never will, but I'll keep that in mind. I'll track you down, hopefully in Boston, outside of TPC Boston, and be able to find somewhere other than Dunkin' Donuts, of course. But appreciate the time, as always, and good luck this week.
Awesome, man. Thank you, buddy.
So there it is, Scott Stallings playing for his FedEx Cup Life this week with Brian Wacker. Brian, thanks so much for talking to Scott. We'll be back next week. We'll talk to you. We'll recap the Northern Trust at Ridgewood Country Club. And we'll be here with Brian as he prepares to head live to TPC Boston to the Dell Technologies Championship, round number two of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Thanks so much for listening to the Playing Through Podcast.